not only for what occurred, but for what did not occur. The report found that the BART officers at the scene were lacking command supervision. No one appeared to be in charge. It is established law enforcement practice that the first and or senior ranking officer on the scene of an incident should be the incident commander, the man or woman in charge. The incident commander's primary function is to calm the situation, reduce tension, and assert command and authority over the officers so they can work as a team in a coordinated fashion to lessen the use of deadly force, if not eliminate it altogether. Further, the presence of an incident commander at the scene on the platform of the Fruitvale Station on New Year's Day would have signaled to the detainees and the witnessing passengers that the BART police were well in charge and in command of the incident. Instead, there was chaos, confusion, and a lack of control for the BART officers at the scene. The report recommends that the BART police management develop, publish, and thoroughly train its officers in the technique and tactics of asserting command control, tactical teamwork, communication and leadership, in instances such as which occurred on New Year's Day. Further, there needs to be improvement in the reporting of use of force and investigations of use of force and debriefing. The institutional practices of reporting use of force incidents within the BART Police Department were found to be substandard by contemporary best practices in law enforcement industry. The BART policy on January 1st, 2009 required officers to report to a supervisor when they use force only in those circumstances where significant force was used. BART should require officers to report all incidents of use of force, including that observed of others. A tightly confined definition of a reportable use of force could contribute to not reporting all force use.
May I interrupt you? I have a certain question regarding that here. I know that the report indicates that the use of force must be investigated more thoroughly, as stated in the report and in your presentation. Under current BART policies, an officer can wait until the end of the shift before reporting the use of force. And I think that your report indicates a need that the use of force not only be reported immediately, but that a supervisor should be deployed immediately to see what the conduct was and also to see if there's any witnesses. Could you just explain briefly the importance of having the investigation conducted by a supervisor immediately and why this would make sense?
Well, the importance of the immediate reporting is to get on the record and to make sure that all of the conduct is actually reported, and so that there is no lapse of memory or there is no falling through the cracks. Having a supervisor involved in the reporting gives the importance and the management oversight of the reporting process so that there is that check and balance to make sure that the reporting is done appropriately.
And the immediacy.
And the immediacy. And so that there's no discrepancy in terms of what happened or no lapse of recollection.
All right, thank you for that. And I just wanted to acknowledge Assemblymember Hill. Thank you for being here. Okay, you may proceed.
Additionally, the report found that uses of force must be investigated more thoroughly. When a use of force incident occurs, the supervisor should respond and conduct an immediate on-scene investigation. Training of all investigating officers and best practices for the conduct of investigations and critical incident review is strongly suggested. The BART Police Department has had very few deadly force situations in its history. Because of that, there were some decisions made at the time of the New Year's Day incident that the report has found could be improved upon in the future. The BART Police Department, including officers, supervisors, and managers, can learn valuable lessons from the New Year's Day situation by identifying and analyzing
the strengths and weaknesses of the decisions and actions that took place during the course of the incident. At each decision point, alternatives should be explored with the officers so that future decisions are better made. Detention methods by BART police were found to be unacceptable. The detainees in the New Year's Day incident described being held in police cars, offices, or cells for extended periods of time. The report found that at no time were any of the detainees placed under arrest. They as a group all stated that they were handcuffed for between 4 and 6 hours. If true, this is far too long to be handcuffed. The BART Police Department should review its detention policies to bring them in compliance with California law and thoroughly train its officers in the effective deployment of detention procedures. Lastly, there should be continued improvement through ongoing auditing and public accountability. We recommend that BART should consider retaining a reputable auditing or oversight firm with experience in police matters to conduct ongoing meaningful audits and evaluations of the BART Police Department. An independent evaluator, oversight, or audit function can identify deficiencies in policies, practices, and operations, and recommend changes for improvement before an incident occurs. These audits and reports should be available to the public to the extent legally allowed for public accountability and transparency. In addition, the report points out that every law enforcement agency must be prepared for circumstances when the agency has a shooting or other critical incident that becomes the focus of public outrage. It is in the agency's and public's best interest that the subsequent investigation be as transparent as possible and that the community and the media be informed of the process. So in closing, I would like to just state that I am very appreciative and commend BART, the BART board, and the executive management for engaging in this process of self-evaluation and the independent investigation. Myers Nave is very appreciative of the cooperation and support that we have received from BART personnel all along the way and throughout the course of our investigation. And that has allowed us to produce this report in a thorough and a timely way. That, in essence, summarizes the significant findings in our report, Mr. Chairman, and I would be happy to respond to any additional questions.
Thank you so much. Very helpful. I just want to go over some points that I think need to be underscored. I mean, obviously, immediacy of a supervisor on site also. I was interested in the detention that you mentioned. Witnesses were detained longer than the usual procedure. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, they were detained for quite some time. And it wasn't so much the length of time that they were detained, the fact that they were handcuffed during this period of time, and at no time were they placed under arrest.
Also, might you comment on how an investigation might be tainted by allowing officers to view a video of an incident prior to being interviewed by investigators?
Well, that actually is a matter that has generated some degree of discussion within the police community in terms of the pros and cons of the ability of an officer to view the video. In our opinion, that taints the ability to have a fresh recollection, a present recollection of the state of mind of the officer at that time. Videos, images can create in the officer's mind perhaps situations, visions that were incidents that they actually did not see, or it could skew their report or their written recollection. So we recommend that the video not be shown to an officer prior to taking the report. report with a statement from the officer. Subsequently, of course, the officer should be entitled to see the video, but I think we believe that the first interview should be that of their actual recollection.
And then in terms of the lack of command structure to deal with incidents, I'm assuming that you're asserting that the bar police who hold supervisorial positions in the department should make it a priority to respond to incidents.
And that's correct. And I believe that Bart will respond to their process there. But at that time, on the time of this incident, the command structure was not in place at the time of that incident.
Right. And I think your report states pretty clearly that there was really no documentation that Bart had that spoke to the expectations of supervisors.
That's correct.
Communication. In regard to the taser issue, your report indicates that the future arrest reports involving tasers should be more closely scrutinized and reviewed by BART Police Department as a useful tool to adjust and enhance tactics as well as manage the risk. And so can you just expand on the importance of that in regard to the tasers?
Well, any instance where a taser is used should be reported, and the circumstances surrounding the use of the taser should be investigated and reported. We make the point in our report that on reviewing the reports and the incidences and the circumstances surrounding the use of the taser, that that could be a good tool for risk management and also training of the officers, and to determine whether or not the use of the taser in fact was appropriate or not.
And then lastly, I was just in regard to interviewing witnesses, what you're saying is don't wait a couple of days, but try to interview the witnesses again as soon as possible, and in the precipitate witnesses.
Well, the witnesses, yes, should be interviewed as soon as possible, and we must say during the course of this investigation, we did outreach to numerous witnesses, which made this a very unique situation. There were hundreds of witnesses, and we did, in addition to the video evidence, and so talked, we did outreach to all of them, and but this was a very unique and complex situation.
Well, in today's world, everything is recorded. Well, I want to thank you very, very much. It's very clear and very precise. And I just wanted to acknowledge the presence of Assembly Member Fiona Ma and colleagues. Any questions or comments? Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you.
I apologize for missing the first few minutes of your presentation, but a couple of questions and mm-hmm. follow up questions to our chair's questions, which I thought, and first of all, thank you. For conducting this hearing this morning, since it's I think very timely and extremely important that we have a good discussion as to where we are and where we can go in the future with related to our policing. Question related to the reporting, or actually the viewing of a video prior to the interviewing. What is the standard practice? I know you mentioned recommendations to what you think should be the case, but is the standard practice in the police and law enforcement to not show a video prior to, or is it?
Well, it's a mixed bag, and actually, one of the police publications just recently did an article which addressed our recommendation, and there was some disagreement relative to whether or not the officer should be entitled to see the video before giving a statement. The Police Officers Association feel that they should be entitled to. We feel, and the experts that we've consulted with believe that that is not the best practice because, as I indicated, it does create a situation of potentially not getting an accurate statement from the officer as to what actually he or she believed at the time. And also the video, as we found, depending on the angle and the perspective, is not always an accurate depiction of the incident. So we feel that it is a best practice not to view the video before the initial interview, but at some subsequent time, the officer would be entitled to see the video and could change their report based on that.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. You also mentioned the policy manual and the lack of an effective or a thorough and dated and updated policy manual. Who within normal departments would be responsible for the creation and the updating of a policy manual?
The responsibility would be through the police chief. Right. And the policy manual that was in effect at the time that we reviewed had policies that were dated and indexes which were dated. And that's what we were basing our review on, and whether or not those policies have been updated, but the dates not changed, or there was some explanation as to why the dating was as old as it was, that could be the case, but on its face it did appear that many of the policies were not kept current. And the bottom line is that there should be a regular annual review, if even not more frequent, of policies, because the law changes so frequently, so rapidly in case law and statutory law. So you want to make sure that your policies are in compliance with the current law.
In terms of the personnel complaint investigations and the procedures that are followed there, do they have a particular, in their policy manual, complaint procedure that they follow when there is an internal complaint?
Yes, there is, and the BART personnel are here to probably speak to that more directly.
I will correct some of those with them. In your overview and in your understanding of how the BART police department operates and understanding the system, the BART system, do you think, and this is very subjective on the part, do you think that there is a need to have a BART police department? Many private agencies and sometimes contract with other providers to provide that service for them.
Well, Senator, I really couldn't speak to that. I think that's something within a discussion and focus beyond my report.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Assembly Member Mani, questions for him? All right, Mr. Knight, I thank you very much. What I'm getting from this report, and you're right to compliment BART on commissioning this report, because I think it's very independent and objective, and the observations ring true, particularly about keeping current, about communication, about immediacy of response to incidences. And I want to thank you again.
Well, thank you very much, and I do have copies of my remarks
that I will thank you. And for those of you who came in after we started, I usually start right on time, so there's a heads up to anybody who's interested in the workings of this committee. Again, we are focusing on the future today, not on the oversight piece, because without practices that are effective and current and immediate, it doesn't matter about the oversight. By law enforcement training in the state of California, and that is Mr. Bob Stresnik, and he'll be followed by BART personnel and the director, Ms. Silver, and after that we will have public comment. Welcome, Mr. Stresnik.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Bob Strizak. I represent the Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training. Before we address any specific questions, I'd like to give you some foundational information on the role of post and specifically how state standards and training are created. The Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training always is concerned with law enforcement incidents that end tragically. We have the Commission's assurance of our cooperation to the extent that it's legally and reasonably possible given the present circumstances. Since 1959, the Commission on Post has been authorized by law to establish training and selection standards for California's peace officers. Today, we serve over 610 law enforcement agencies, 85,000 peace officers, 5,000 reserve officers, and 8,000 public safety dispatchers that are assigned to law enforcement agencies. Participation in the POST program is voluntary, but over 95% of California's law enforcement agencies participate in the POST program. Participating agencies are routinely audited by POST staff to ensure compliance with existing legislative and regulatory standards. 10 members of POST staff monitor 610 law enforcement agencies for compliance. The agency's executive officer is notified of these findings, including timelines for corrective action if necessary. Recalcitrant responses can be met with commission action to suspend or revoke an agency's participation in the POST program. Each one of the 40 POST-certified police academies delivers the minimum state standard for peace officer training, that's 664 hours. These 664 hours entails 42 what we refer to as learning domains, aka topics. While academies can never go below the 664 hours, they always are welcome to go above, and the average delivery of each academy is 850 hours. Some academies deliver up to 1,250 hours of training. There are two types of academies. There's the agency-specific academies, the LAPDs, the CHBs. If you want to work for those agencies, you have to go to the academies. And then there's the college-affiliated academies. College-affiliated academies serve a region of law enforcement. Napa Valley College, for instance, would serve Vacaville, Fairfield, et cetera, et cetera. Agencies that can't afford to sustain an academy because they only hire 2 to 5 officers at a time.
Let me jump in. In terms of applicants, there's a screening process. Is there a standardized training process for the different agencies, or is it pretty much?
For all peace officers in the state of California, existing law regulates that they have a background investigation, criminal history, psychological evaluation, and physical testing, reading and writing. There's a battery of about 9 different phases in a background investigation before a peace officer becomes a peace officer. In the state of California, as a general rule, 1,000 applicants are filtered to attain 100 candidates. Out of the 100 candidates, about 10% will fail in the academy. And out of the 90 that graduate, about 10% will fail during the probationary period. So out of 1,000 applicants, about 80 officers are yielded for California law enforcement.
Do you have an age, a limit? Is it too late for me, I guess?
I'm not sure what you're talking about. Topics taught to peace officers are generally validated by a job task analysis conducted by POST. In other words, we ask you the question, what do peace officers need to do to perform the jobs? It's important to have an understanding of how they establish state standards. Not all training topics qualify as a state standard. For example, the theft of farm equipment or agricultural products might be important to jurisdictions in the Central Valley, but they're not important to Los Angeles, San Francisco, and so forth. Conversely, the recovery of aircraft-grade titanium is not a critical issue for Central Valley jurisdictions. So it's illogical to mandate state training standards to agencies that don't necessarily need the topic. Which brings me to the point that the taser in the state of California is not a state training standard. The simple reason is that not every single law enforcement agency in California deploys a taser. So it would be cost ineffective to mandate that training for agencies that don't use a taser.
So is taser training different from other weapons training?
Taser training, generically referred to as electronics weapons training.
Right, the taser is the brand name.
Right. But the electronics weapons training has its own unique training requirements and characteristics. However, it does integrate into other curriculum that we teach, the use of force spectrum. And so that's integrated generically into that broad category, but there's specific applications to deploying the taser.
Does Post have a recommendation on where to wear the taser?
We do. In 2008, we recommended, following a negative field incident, we recommended a weak hand carry for the taser. Now, it's still the choice of the law enforcement executive to determine policy on that issue.
So what input would Post then have on policies regarding how to utilize tasers and safety protocols?
Great question. Brings me to my next paragraph.
Okay.
Should a Post participate in the agency desired electronic weapons training, Post provides support to those agencies by assisting with the development of relevant training material that complies with Post standards, which require expanded course outlines to the third level of detail, hourly course distribution, instructor resumes, instructor qualification courses, and guidelines for safety policies to be applied by the learning environment. If an agency requests the development of the training, we will assist with that package, and that package becomes a post-certified training course. I'd also like to take the opportunity to correct a couple of references made to Post in the Myers Mandate Report. Implied in the report was that Post directs policy to agencies. We do not direct any agency policy. That is left up to the autonomy of the sheriff or chief running that agency. However, from time to time, we'll develop guidelines or best practices to make available to all law enforcement agencies so that executive officer can pick and choose what they feel is most appropriate for their agency, their demographic, their communities, and their needs. And lastly, I'd just like to comment on standard topics. The creation of a standardized curriculum does not always guarantee standardized performance. It has been the goal of the Post Commission to develop training programs that maximize the chances for peaceful resolution for all parties involved in field situations. The fact that California law enforcement affects 1.5 million arrests annually, and the vast majority of these are unremarkable, attests to these efforts. Still, the application of any existing standard as an evaluative tool to any incident may fall short. The complexities facing officers charged with enforcing laws in today's society can be challenging. Generally, peace officers are trained to accurately diagnose field conditions and to recognize, effectively assess, and develop a response to observable behavioral indicators that may involve a single factor or an amalgam of conditions. These conditions could include and are difficult to replicate in training environments, fear, chaos, mental disorders such as bipolar behavior, autism, clinical depression, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's disease, traumatic brain injury, or the elderly, children, and adolescents, or suicidal attempt, the influence of medications including prescribed and controlled substances, postpartum psychosis, insulin shock, criminal behavior, ambient noise, lighting, life experiences, or many other conditions known or unknown to the responding officers that may involve persons in these situations, either as a suspect, a victim, a witness, occurring in peaceful or violent conditions, with or without the benefit of a common language or culture that may allot the luxury of time or time to act and require a split-second decision-making. With that said, we generally relegate the analysis of the convergence of all these factors to the criminal justice system and the appropriate law enforcement agency. Thank you for your patience. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you so much, and I was taken by your last emphasis on the mental health issues and what officers oftentimes have to deal with, particularly in an urban setting, but not exclusively. And in San Francisco, I was proud to author some legislation that made training in and around psychiatric conditions for police officers available, and has been very, very successful in terms of the participation of officers. They're very, very interested.
Thank you for your support.
In regard to BART and its specific training. Are there any specific trainings that BART undergoes in addition to the standard police officer training?
There's always supplemental training to any kind of assignment. An example would be, while a peace officer might receive basic standard, state standard approved training to become a peace officer, if they eventually he or she evolves into a sexual assault assignment, they would receive a specialized sexual assault investigation training. If you were assigned to an airport or public conveyance, generally you receive airport training that's unique to that environment. While POST does not mandate any additional supplemental training to BART regarding the public conveyance issue, I would assume perhaps that the officers receive some type of specific training that addresses public conveyance tactics.
We read, I think it was the NAVA report about how to patrol trains from beginning to end and procedures there, when that would be tailored specifically to a transit agency. And regarding crowd control issues, what training is given to peace officers to deal with unruly crowds?
I'll give you a cross section here. Once again, this is a state minimum, so agencies are free to go above the minimum. In the basic academy under crowd control learning domain, one of the learning needs is described as peace officers need to understand the tactical principles involved in the management and control of crowds in order to ensure the protection of the First Amendment rights of the crowd and the safety of the entire community. That entails phases of riot development, primary law enforcement objective, crowd management, crowd control, riot control, peace officer formations to control crowds, and tactics to defuse, safely defuse crowd disorders.
Thank you. I think that's my questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here this morning. Just a question to follow up on yours, Mr. Chair. The specific training referencing for transit or conveyance agencies, you indicated that you assumed or thought that they would perhaps have that training. Is there a specific post training for that that is done at post, through post? And would you know if BART Police utilizes that particular specific training that you provide?
There is no post public transit course. We manage over 4,000 in-service training courses developed based on training need. If a course would be developed, one of the criteria in order to be a good steward of state monies for training police officers is that we generally, in the development of a course, want to ensure that that course can be applied to other agencies that want to attend. For example, if we certify an electronic weapons course to an agency, we require that at least 20-25% of the class during each presentation is open to other agencies to attend and train. So, to answer your question directly, there is no course for public conveyance in this particular application. We would have to look to see if Los Angeles and other cities with mass transit conveyance would benefit from a course such as that.
Okay.
Do you keep track of everyone who goes through your program?
Yes.
And is that available, like, if people are interested in, you know, seeing who went through your course, when they went, and is this like a yearly training that they do, or? What do you recommend?
With 85,000 peace officers, it's ongoing. We do maintain training records that would have to be requested through the California Public Records Act for that type of information. But we don't routinely disseminate that type of information.
How long is your training program?
For the basic course, it's the minimum state standard is 664 hours of training. However, most academies train 850 hours. Some train up to 1,250 hours. And that's to...
Continuous, right?
Well, that's to graduate from the basic course, and then they're required to complete a probationary period of 1 year to 18 months called Field Training Officer Program, in which the new officer works with an older officer, OJT equivalent, and they're evaluated. There's also a 24-month continuing professional training requirement for all peace officers. So every within every 24 months, they have to complete a minimum of 24 hours of training. 14 hours of which that training has to be perishable skills training that addresses driving, use of force, firearms, and communication skills. And then officers are free to attend whatever training above and beyond those minimums. There's supervisory courses available. There's mid-management courses available. There's command college and executive level courses available.
I was, I had a thought about the, you know, I think Post is very good at what it does, and the emphasis on transit agencies, and when you mentioned LA, you know, might be something that could be very beneficial, particularly for BART. I don't know if there's anything developed that way, or, you know, specifically tailored to transit agencies, but it seems to me there's some generic issues that all peace officers deal with, and then, you know, perhaps from the vast experience that you can draw on in terms of your members, you know, there might be a way to have some standards and criteria for transit agencies that would be unique to, you know, that venue. So
that could be possible.
Not that you don't have enough to do, but I think BART could particularly benefit from that. All right, if there's no other questions, we will move on to BART personnel and Ms. Dever. And I just really want to thank you very much. You and Ms. Williams have been very, very helpful.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And so now we're going to hear from Ms. Dever, the general manager of BART, and Travis Gibson, the commander of BART Police Department. Welcome. Thank you so much for your cooperation. And I know that some of the things you heard are not brand new to you at all. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to respond to some of the recommendations, maybe talk a little bit about recommendations that might have already been, you might have already taken some steps to do. Timeline, et cetera. And again, you know, we are focused on today and the future. I think that's going to resolve many of the contentious issues that surround this hearing.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As you said, I am Dorothy Dever. I'm the general manager of BART, and this morning I'm joined by Matt Burrows, who is BART's general counsel, and Travis Gibson, who is currently acting for our chief of police, Gary G., who is out on medical leave. And I do appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning to discuss actions that we have taken in response to the shooting of Oscar Grant on January 1st by now former BART police officer. And with very much with an eye on the future, as you have noted, Chairman Amiano, on how we go forward. While the events that bring us here today are irreversible, I want to assure you that we have worked diligently this year, along with members of the public, to conduct a comprehensive review of our police department and to make the improvements necessary to strengthen the department in ways that will help avoid similar tragedy in the future and assure continued provision of safety and security to our customers who rely on the BART system. Early in January of this year, the BART Board of Directors established a committee of the board, the Police Department Review Committee, to provide greater board focus on the BART police and the services that they provide to the public. The board has held dozens of public meetings to hear community concerns, to involve the public in the efforts that we have taken in response to the shooting, to review the training, policies, practices, and procedures of our department, and to establish citizen oversight in BART. I want to begin this morning by giving you an overview of the actions that we have taken to date and ask Commander Gibson to comment in more detail and more specifically on the draft action plan that the department developed in response to the recommendations in the Myers-Nave public report, which you've just heard from Ms. Williams on. On October 5th, a draft of that action plan was presented and discussed with the BART Police Department Review Committee and members of the public. Following the January 1 shooting, BART hired two outside expert entities to conduct two separate independent reviews of the department. As you have heard from Ms. Williams, I will be brief in my summary of the Myers-Nave report, but that was the first independent review that was begun in February and was focused on the conduct of the internal affairs investigation of the shooting by the Myers-Nave firm. While it is unusual for a police agency with its own internal affairs division to turn to an outside entity, a third party, to conduct the internal affairs investigation, we did so to assure ourselves and the public of the complete objectivity and independence of this investigation. As an independent third party, Myers-Nave investigated the actions of all the officers present during the events leading up to the shooting, as well as review the policies, practices, and procedures governing the response to potentially violent incidents, as well as the use of force in such incidents. Ms. Williams has already described the constraints around the discussion and the dissemination of information contained in the internal affairs investigation regarding personnel matters, but we specifically requested a second public report in the scope of work of the contract with Myers-Nave to conduct as part of our commitment to make as much information available to the public as was permissible by law. That report is included in your packet and is also available on our website at www.bart.gov. We have carefully reviewed the report and recommendations. I believe them to be thorough, comprehensive, and as you can see, the report identified a number of areas where BART can and must improve its response to future incidents and strengthen its policies, practices, and procedures. We are moving forward to act on the recommendations, which we believe will affect substantial improvements in our department. Among the report's recommendations that I would highlight, and we've heard briefly from already this morning, is updating the police policy manual, which governs the work of the department, additional training on trained tactics, teamwork, taser, use and updated policies associated with those issues, those areas, improving communications and command during incidents, instituting more strenuous use of force and deadly force reporting requirements and investigatory processes, and enhancing the transparency and accountability in reporting and in our investigation process. The BART Police Review Department continues in existence. It will receive frequent updates from the department on our progress in implementing these recommendations, and will make periodic reports to the full board of directors. In a moment, Commander Gibson will discuss in more detail several of the key actions that are planned as part of our response to the report. But first, I'd like to take a moment just to review with the committee, highlight five important areas where the department has already initiated action earlier this year. Each of these areas were, in fact, addressed by either the Myers-Nave report or the Noble report, and as we have begun initiatives before receiving those reports, we will go back and revisit these five areas because in each case we have not incorporated all of the recommendations, but we have been moving forward this year in advance of receiving these outside reviews. First and foremost, our use of force policy has been revised. We now require the report of all use of force incidents by an officer who uses force or an officer who observes the use of force. Our prior policy required the reporting of significant use of force incidents, which encompassed the use of equipment or weapons. We've now said all use of force policy must be reported. All use of force reports are forwarded through the chain of command up to the chief of police and filed with the internal affairs investigation unit. And we have created a new use of force review panel within the department to review all uses of force and to report any recommendations, either for change in policy procedure, change in training, or other recommendations to the Chief of Police. In the area of training, our current year budget has been increased to provide...
Excuse me. We go back just to the use of force. I just want to go over something. In regard to the use of force recording, so is BART planning on implementing the recommendation that an on-scene investigation be conducted by a supervisor immediately following the report of use of force?
That is specifically one of the recommendations that we need to go back and look at in the context of the Myers-Navet report. That is not included in our current policy. There is a requirement for a supervisor to respond immediately to any incident that results in a detention, a custody case, but we have not yet incorporated that recommendation.
Okay, and then would BART also recommend that supervisors involved in use of force incidents also be subject to investigation?
Any officer who is engaged in use of force.
And then, I think you mentioned this, but just to underscore, is BART planning on adopting the overall tone of this report, that the Chief of Police become more aware of the reports of use of force so that he or she doesn't become too insulated?
Absolutely, and that is why in this amended policy we have required that both all of the police reports that go up through the chain of command go to the Chief of Police, as well as the reports of the newly created use of force review panel. In the second area of training, we have increased our training budget, and all police officers will now receive 40 hours of training annually. This exceeds the post standard minimum of 24 hours of training every 2 years. By providing 40 hours of training a year, will certainly facilitate the delivery of some of the additional training that has been recommended in both the Myers-Navet and the Noble report. Our training curriculum has been expanded and includes, this is not an exhaustive list, but includes, in addition to the post-perishable skills that prior witness commented on, cultural diversity, racial profiling, tactical and interpersonal communication, policy manual review, firearms range, use of force options and policy review, defensive tactics, arrest and control, and TASER recertification training.
If I may jump in, in your draft plan, you do address the TASER policy and protocol sections of the Myers-Navet report. Specifically, though, what are your recommendations in this area? Have they been developed yet, or?
Commander Gibson is going to take you through the changes in our TASER policy. The primary change is a change to adopt the recommendation of a weak side, weak hand carry. And additional training, but I will ask Commander Gibson, if I may, to comment on that in more detail.
And Commander, are you planning on conducting training on the combative suspect control team that was recommended by Myers-Navet on page 3, paragraph 4, if you're familiar with that?
I'm familiar with it. We have, don't quite call it that, we do a force options training where you look at different weapons for different jobs, so to speak. So it's not exactly what they're talking about, but a similar system.
Okay. Did the one of their recommendations touch on where to wear a taser, if you're gonna,
yes,
that'll be part of what you need.
The third area I wanted to call to your attention is the critical area of policy manual updates. The department is in the process, and began over a year ago, to update and convert its policy manual using the Lexapol system. The first group of 8 critical policies has been revised and reissued, and all officers have received training on these new revised policies as part of this year's expanded training program. And those policies address racial bias-based profiling, shooting policy, the electronic control device or TASER policy, officer response to calls, use of force, control devices and techniques, vehicle pursuit policy, and officer-involved shootings. The remainder of the manual will be completed by year end, and we are committed to an annual review and update of our policy manual going forward. In the area of discipline and probationary periods, which is a topic covered in the address in the Noble report in more detail, but referenced in Myers-Nave as well, these are topics that are governed by our collective bargaining agreement with the Police Officers Union and the Police Managers Union at BART, and I'm pleased that we have the opportunity with the current round of contract negotiations, which has just been concluded, we have reached agreements with both organizations to adopt a more traditional police disciplinary system, which provides a wider range of discipline actions and options available to the management of the department. We've also reached agreement with MA to establish expand probationary periods for all police management positions to a one-year probationary period to make sure we have plenty of time to assure that we have the right people in the right management positions.
Did the topic come up of early warning systems, and some cities have that, San Francisco, where your little red flags go up and intervention could be very helpful?
And that is certainly one of the recommendations from the Noble Management Audit. We do not have the formal technology-based early warning system in place. That is one of the the Noble report is still in a draft format. We are providing some comments and corrections. So we have yet to fully absorb. It's over 100 recommendations in that report that we've just received last month. It is a valuable piece of work, a valuable audit, and a lot to absorb and digest, and that's certainly one of the recommendations that we are focused on, but have some work to do as to how we best implement, given our size of our department and number of incidents that we have in the course of the year. I think in addition to the formal technology-based learning system, however, one of the major motivations in the change in our use of force policy to address all uses of force and report those up to through the command to the chief of police is getting at that very issue, Mr. Chairman, making sure we are looking at every incident and looking for trends and be able to take appropriate action.
In terms of the chief of police, I know you're currently searching for one, and so who is in charge of the store in that respect currently?
Well, our current chief of police, Gary G, retires on December 31st, so he is chief of police for the BART Police Department. He is out on a medical leave at the moment, and Commander Gibson is acting chief in his during his absence.
All right, and I'm just thinking that when the new chief is selected, all this will have been translated and transcribed, I assume, so that they'll be up to speed about.
And I think the Noble report, as I've mentioned, particularly, as well as the Myers-Nave report, includes recommendations that some of which we can move on immediately, but will not all happen overnight. And I personally would very much like the new chief of police of BART to be involved in making some of the critical decisions that will shape the force in his or her management and leadership. The final area to mention briefly does deal with organizational structure, and Commander Gibson will give you a bit of more detailed overview of the force itself. But our structure is a chief and two commanders, and then a number of lieutenants and sergeants below them who provide the management leadership for the department. During our contract negotiations, we did reach agreement with the Police Managers Association that those two commander positions would be removed from the collective bargaining unit and increased to the number of three command staff who are independent from collective bargaining. Finally, I made several references already this morning to the Noble report. That was the second independent review of the police department and management audit that began in April when the board of directors selected the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives to conduct that audit for us. Noble has assisted departments across the country in a variety of issues, including management audits. The goal of the audit, I believe, was met in providing a comprehensive evaluation and substantive results and recommendations for our consideration. The draft audit was presented at a special board meeting last month. As I say, it is still in draft, and there are some modifications that still need to be made. In the interest of time, I will not cover all, even a summary, the executive summary of their recommendations that is in your packet, but they do cover many of the same areas in the Myers-Nave report, use of force policy, updating the police manual, establishing better data collection and record keeping to support our analysis and compliance, particularly with regard to racial profiling or bias-based policing. They've made a number of changes on hiring and selection process, as well as training and ongoing strategies for community involvement. As you noted, Chairman Amiano, they do recommend the development and implementation of a computerized early warning system. And Assemblyman Hill, they also address the question specifically that you had raised of, does BART need its own police department? When that audit is final, we will work to develop an action plan, as we have in response to the Myers-Nave report, incorporate both sets of recommendations that ultimately will be combined into what I believe will be a valuable single blueprint to guide change and improvement in the department for the future. With that, I will turn to Commander Gibson to discuss in more detail the major actions planned in response to the Myers-Nave report.
All right, thank you. Before we do that, colleagues, any questions or comments from Ms. Duggar?
Thank you, and thank you for being here this morning. Related to the policies that we're looking at for the future and how they will be, and I know Lexapol is going to have a contract with them to develop those and work with them, and you indicated that you'll have something completed by year end and then an annual review thereafter. Is that agreement with Lexapol just for this year, or does it extend out? The concern is how the annual reviews, then who will be what doing that, how will it be implemented, and what guidelines will you use? Will you continue to use Lexapol in that, or some other firm that does it?
Lexapol, it's not a specific contract, it's a nationally provided service, web-based, that provides policy manual content to law enforcement agencies throughout the country. We subscribe to it.
That's so the agreement that you mentioned in the response. It's an agreement with Lexapol. That's an ongoing agreement.
It's an ongoing subscription, and then they periodically provide updates to, driven by changes in the law, changes coming out of case law, as well as updates for best practices.
And you'll be incorporating those then in the annual review as you go forward?
That's correct. Our job is to take that standardized information and then tailor it to the BART system and our department. And so that's the work of translation from this national service into a document that works best in our application.
Well, that's great. And that kind of follows into my next question, which, you know, the changes that you'll be making to the policies as you move forward, how will you evaluate those changes and measure the outcomes that you're looking for, and how will you know that you've achieved those as you move to the implementation of those new policies?
I think there are a couple of different approaches. One, we do set, establish each year in our budget process performance goals and objectives for the department that range from issues of response time, to emergency calls, to visibility of officers on the system, to crime rates in particular areas of activity, and we monitor and report on that monthly, report publicly, quarterly at each of our board meetings, and that's a performance based. What results are we getting? Several of the policies themselves include a reporting and evaluation component, excuse me, such as the use of force policy, where there is a specific incident by incident annual review. So they will look in that review not only at was the use of force within policy or outside of policy, but even if it was within policy, does it recommend, does it prompt a change for a change to the policy itself? I think a more regular, I'm certainly committed to a more regular process of audit of our administrative processes than we have engaged in the past. I think the value of these reports is self-evident, and it is a practice that we apply in many aspects of our work at heart, and certainly my commitment is to apply it more regularly to the police department as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's important to emphasize that once these are finalized, that they're institutionalized, so no matter who the director or who the police, we have these as a basis. So,
one further question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, I forgot anything. You have in your responses the target completion dates, and one was the training and issuance of critical policies, and that was dated September 30th. Have you met that goal?
Yeah.
You have, and you're on schedule for the other two for December 23rd.
It's to complete the remainder of the
policies. The remaining policies and the conversion of the general orders. Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Okay, Commander.
Thank you again. Good morning, Chair Hanamiyama and members of the committee. Again, I'm Commander Travis Gibson of our police department. I've been with the department since 1982. I've served as a commander since 99. And again, I'm acting on behalf of Chief G, who couldn't be with us today. Just a little background to put things in perspective. The Bart Police Department was formed in 72 and currently employs 286 police personnel, of which 206 are sworn peace officers. A Bart Police Department fact sheet, I believe, has been given to you, and with additional information on Bart Police staffing. Our officers provide around-the-clock law enforcement services to our 345,000 daily riders at 43 stations, 32 lots, and other district facilities. Bart crosses four counties and at least 26 different law enforcement jurisdictional boundaries. A comparison of our average weekday ridership to a city population would make Bart the equivalent of about the fourth city in the Bay Area. We hire entry-level officers as well as experienced officers from other agencies. The qualifications and training requirements for BART officers exceed the guidelines of the California Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training, i.e. POST. In addition to meeting POST requirements, every BART police officer must have at least 30 college semester units and be required to pass a polygraph exam. Most officers are assigned to the patrol bureau. However, they are also eligible for special assignments such as detectives, background investigations, and special problems. The department currently consistently meets its goal of responding to emergencies within 4 minutes. The majority of crime at BART occurs in parking lots, followed by stations, and then trains. At the October 4th public meeting of the BART Police Department Review Committee, the department presented an action plan in response to the recommendations contained in the Myers-Nabe public report. Each section of the Myers-Nabe report was addressed with specific departmental changes and improvements. The NOVA management audit is still in draft form, and the BART review team is currently in the process of providing input, clarification, and corrections. When the NOVA report is complete, a specific action plan will be developed to address its recommendations and areas of concern. The major themes in both reports focus on supervision, training, review and revision, policy review and revision, increased community involvement, the use of force reporting review. As the general manager noted in her comments, the department has initiated changes in some of these areas prior to the Myers-Mabe report being issued. I will now comment on some of the department's response to the major themes contained within the Myers-Mabe public report. Let me start by acknowledging that as a department, we have fallen short of the recommendations in the Myers-Mabe and Noble reports on frequency of policy review and revision. However, I want to note that many of our critical policies have been subject to more frequent review and update. Also, the training provided to our officers over the years have reflected current post standards. And you've heard some of this over a year ago. In recognition of the need for a comprehensive policy review, the department entered into an agreement with Lexapol, which is a risk management company that provides web-based public safety policy manuals. The Lexapol system is the vehicle we are using to review and update all police department policies. Lexapol's policy manual is populated by over 140 individual policies that are based on the latest statutory law, case law, and best practices. The conversion to Lexapol involves reviewing the policies that are in the new system and customizing them to reflect the specifics of BART operations. The process, as well as the related officer training, will be complete by the end of 2009. Going forward, the department will review policies at least annually and will ensure that all policy updates by Lexapol are incorporated into the policy manual. Whenever a policy is updated or changed, it will also be reviewed by the Office of General Counsel, and training will be provided for all sworn personnel. A companion system of ongoing lineup training on policies is also being developed. On use of force, the department's use of force policy was recently revised and reissued. All uses of force must now be immediately reported as soon after the incident as is practicable. Any police employee who witnesses an instance of the use of force is also required to report that occurrence immediately. All uses of force must be reported up the chain of command to the chief of police. As the general manager stated, I actually made this change a while back, but a sergeant is responsible to respond to all calls where a person is taken into custody. If a violation is found, the incident will be investigated. If the violation of a policy is sustained, discipline and or training will be implemented. Also, to increase accountability, in May of 2009, the department added one lieutenant and one sergeant to assist with caseload and to provide additional layer of supervision in the Office of Internal Affairs. At least quarterly, the Office of Internal Affairs must submit a report to the Chief of Police that includes all citizen complaints and allegations of misconduct, including findings and dispositions. And this is for a 5-year period from the date of each individual report. In June of 2009, the department established a use of force review panel to review, again, all uses of force to determine whether the force was within policy, whether it was the best method that could have been used, whether additional training is needed, and whether the policy should be modified. The panel is comprised of a command level officer, a sergeant who is a defensive tactics instructor, and one officer who is a current post-certified instructor. And those recommendations also go to the chief of police.
Okay, jump in. In regard to a deadly force investigation, will BART adopt a recommendation that all witnesses to alleged deadly force incidents be interviewed the day of the possible?
Again, as the general manager said, I certainly support that. Again, these policies went forth before the two reviews were complete, and some of these things were going back and tweaking and improving. But I would say absolutely that's a should be a cornerstone.
And is BART planning on adopting the recommendation that officers not viewing the video prior to being questioned?
That's kind of a tough one in that there are two schools of thought on that process. One, internal affairs, post-approved internal affairs course will teach one thing and another will teach another. I think we need to really study it and find out which way is the best practice. And if one is absolutely the best way to go, we need to do what the best practice is.
I think, from a layman's point of view, I think it's better if they didn't view the video, because I think it can predispose psychologically, particularly if you're coming down from a crisis incident, and you might see it through a veil of your own subjectivity, for I'm talking about all of us. And you referred to Post standards a few times, and I think that Post acknowledged that they, and we acknowledge, of course, their efficiency, but that in terms of transit agency police, that's an area that they haven't developed criteria, the tailor-made. And so it's fine that you refer, we're within the limits or the standards or the parameters of Post criteria, but not even this panel, if not even they, are the be-all, end-all. And so I think, you got to start thinking out of the box here in terms of the special challenges and needs of transit agency police, particularly in an urban area such as the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland. That's my two cents. Is BART also planning on adopting the recommendation that officers be required to report all use of force incidents, even by other officers?
I think that was one of the lines I said. Hopefully I said that. Okay, let's see. We stopped at training. The department is currently in compliance with Post requirements of 24 hours of training for every officer every 2 years. The current fiscal budget, though, includes 40 hours of training per officer. This increased level of training will be maintained in future years. The department is currently sending all sworn personnel through forced options training, taser update, and defensive tactics training. In January, department instructors will attend a train-the-trainer course on bias-based profiling, and then they will return to the department and instruct the rest of the personnel. Detectives must receive a minimum of 128 hours of post-approved training specifically related to criminal investigations. Dispatchers have recently been or received training to reemphasize the importance of gathering and disseminating all pertinent information on any given incident. With regard to policy changes for the taser and changes in training, Myers-Nabe did make suggestions specific to the taser policy and protocols. The report stated that the department should eliminate one of the methods of carrying the taser. We agree, the department agrees, although it should be noted that that's a double-edged sword too, because there are other industry experts that agree that that particular carry is safe, I believe, including the people who make it the taser. However, it's the goal of this department to ensure that officers are carrying tasers in a way that is consistent with best practices. So we're going to change that policy. Refresher taser training is currently ongoing as we speak, and the department will conduct refresher taser training annually.
Do BART police use any other non-lethal weapon, the rubber bullets or anything like that?
They have specialized people trained to use rubber bullets. All officers are able to carry OC, pepper spray, and a baton.
And they're trained.
Correct.
You know, In the interest of time, because I do want to allow public comment, if you could just hit the highlights and then the conclusion.
Sure.
And we have questions from the committee as well.
With regard to community involvement, we realize that we need to do more of this. We've made a concerted effort to get out and do more meetings with the public, working in all the neighborhood councils in an effort to basically rehabilitate our image amongst the community. We'll continue to do that and as we go forward. I did want to make one comment on supervisory response, because we were a little bit at odds with Myers Nande. Just for clarification, that night of January 1, supervisory police personnel were assigned to the Oakland area at the time of that initial call. The call was for a fight, no weapons on a train. As soon as the call was broadcast, two lieutenants did respond from West Oakland, where they had handled a call of a man with a gun, and a lieutenant and a sergeant did respond from MacArthur, where they had a disturbance call. All arrived within about 5 minutes, but not before the shooting occurred. When advised that we had a gunshot victim, additional supervisors also responded to the scene. So just a clarification in terms of supervisory personnel on the scene.
Okay, it's interesting to me. I understand the complexity of New Year's Eve, and people do like to get intoxicated, or at least get a little buzz on it and take public transportation, which again shows that police response and supervisor response needs to be tailored to a transit. How do you deal with that as opposed to people in a big square or something like that? So I'd like to see some emphasis, particularly, and maybe the post could be helpful in developing with you. That one question, since we did get a little specific here, and I've been trying to be a little more general. In terms of when there is deadly force or use of force, I know in this particular case, the officer in question left the force immediately, as I remember. But would there be any drug testing or alcohol testing that's required of the officer, the alleged? Not a particular officer, but.
Yes, it is our policy that any time that has happened, they get an alcohol and drugs screen.
And usually would that be immediate?
Yes, immediately.
But that didn't happen in this case?
Yes, because of different things happen.
Because of?
Okay, one more quick point, and then I'll try to give you a break of close here. Just one more, and this is more for clarification. The department does practice concepts that are consistent with California Standardized Emergency Management System, SIMS, the National Incident Management System, NIMS, in that the first officer that arrives at a scene is in charge of the scene until someone with more expertise or a higher ranking officer gets there. The statement, Myers-Nave indicated that we didn't follow our own policy using the leapfrog method of searching for trains. And just to cut it short, when you have crush load trains and they're standing room only and people are filling out, that's just not a viable method of searching a train. And so that wasn't anything that we could have used as a tool that night. I do agree that that's one of the things that should be looked at in terms of kind of what you, Chairman, mentioned in terms of maybe coming up with a program that deals with transit. But for that night, that was not an option. And then just in conclusion, we recognize that the Myers-Nave report and the Noble Management Audit have valuable observations and recommendations that that we can and must implement. We've also reported that some of these things we've already put into place even prior to these reports coming out. We know we have a lot of work to do. The department will continue to use reports like these to help make corrections, to improve the service we provide to our communities that BART serves and ensure the safety and security of our customers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. A couple of questions. One, in kind of back to the specific kinds of training that you know, versus, but coupled with regular police training. And do you have, I mean, have you had a program specifically set to deal with that issue of the transit agency in terms of training? I mean, kind of we've heard from Post and how it operates, but is there something that you've been doing specific to that?
We do a couple of things in that. When a train comes in, the first, and I forget how many weeks now, 5-6 weeks, is spent in a focus program. And during that time, that's when we're teaching them things related to BART, things related to transit. We take them down in the tubes and next to trains, and things that are unique to being on a transit agency. Those kind of things are also incorporated into our field training program in terms of train nomenclature and again, what to expect, the train movement, how to walk on a train, those kind of things.
Thank you. The issue of staffing, and thank you for providing us, Commander, the list of, you indicated 286 personnel. You know, looking at the statistics here, and I have no basis as a layman to know whether this is an adequate personnel staffing level or an inadequate staffing level based on the contacts, crime contacts, felony contacts, weapons confiscated. On what basis does the agency use to determine the appropriate staffing level?
We've determined through a lot of, it goes back years, but that response time drives it also. We think that we need to respond to an emergency no less than 4 minutes, or else it's too late. Non-emergencies, for customer service, we need to respond in 8 minutes. And the staffing, in terms of the way we staff, we've over the years figured out how many stations and officer can handle at a time, and we've looked at our map and we staff to that level. And so we feel that the staffing that we're employing now is adequate. It tends to be at minimum staffing, so there's not a lot of room for fluff. But I think we're able to basically do what we need to do, get to calls and help people when they need help in a timely manner.
Thank you. Just two more questions. In the Myers report, they talk about the complaint procedure, personnel complaint investigations. What is the procedure, and how many complaints per year do you get now?
I've got the exact number somewhere, but the complaint procedure is, number one, anyone can make a complaint through an email, through the BART website, to an officer, on the phone, email, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They can remain anonymous if they wish, and we will still take the report. That complaint is then forwarded over to the Internal Affairs Office, who will immediately initiate a report and start looking into it. I'll take the general manager's word for it. Anywhere from 12 to 15 a year, with possibly a little bit more of a spike this year.
Of complaints, and how many of those are involving excessive force?
I can say that most are rudeness and policy complaints. I don't have the figures in front of me. I'm sorry. I thought I bought them actually.
We'd be happy to provide that data if the committee is interested as a follow-up.
Thank you. And then one final question. It looks, I'm doing some research for today's hearing and just the issue in general. It looks like it is, back in 1992, there was an incident that occurred, and some of the a serious incident. And in some of the accounts and opinions that came in some of the articles that appeared after that, they talked about one particular thing, if I could just quote it, but read it, but just paraphrase. They talked about that the BART police seem to be a little more lenient than others related to the use of deadly force. And the comment was made that the officer must believe that, quote, the suspect, I guess, is in the manual at the time. And my question is this still a more lenient policy, and is this still the policy that's in effect? The suspect, and this I'm quoting, the suspect is likely to, this is that the officer must only believe that the suspect is likely to continue to threaten death or serious bodily harm to another human being as the criteria for the use of deadly force. And versus, you know, that seems to be a more lenient policy than others. Is that still, would you have any recollection? I mean, it's tough to know the exact policy, I know, but I guess my concern is the policy that you're going to be adopting more consistent with other agencies, inconsistent with consistent with Post, I'm sure has a policy related to the use of deadly force.
As far as I'm concerned, as we sit right here today, I don't believe our policy is any more lenient than any of our other peers around where we work. I'll guarantee you that once we get our lexical system in place, the reason we have it is because they advertise best practices, the latest statutory case law, and that will be consistent with case law, statutory law, and best practices and the best opinions out there.
If I may add, Ms. Assemblyman, I think the other metric are looking at outcomes. Certainly, any fatal shooting is one too many to occur. In the 37 years of the BART Police Department, there have been three. And going back to Commander Gibson's comparative data, if you were looking at the BART customer population as a city, we'd be the fourth largest city in the Bay Area. And I think that rate of, certainly there's different activity on the BART system than in an entire community. I'm not trying, the comparison is not exact, but another indicator of how are we performing in the context of our fellow law enforcement agencies.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's interesting you brought up the 92 incident, because that's how I got involved with police oversight, in addition to what was happening in San Francisco and their police department. I do remember that case, and it was as contentious as some things that have happened recently. So there is a long history here, and you know, that is one of the reasons that as an elected state official now, that I took a great interest and concern about recent incidents and BART's follow through. So in case anybody was wondering about the genesis of that, it's been a number of years, maybe 17 exactly. We were all much younger then, and hopefully now we're going to be much wiser. Seeing no other questions from the committee, let me say I think this was a beneficial hearing. I think it's important that when you have such emotional issues to contend with, that we kind of isolate ourselves just to take a step back and look at what had happened and how we don't want it to ever happen again. And, you know, I know you have a board of directors that are elected, and you know, incumbent on them is going to be a resolve to this issue. The follow through has to be more than lip service. I think we've heard some very, very good recommendations, and your interpretations of them, I think, show that a transit agency does need policies that are tailored, and that perhaps Post could be a partner with this, loaning their expertise on enforcement in general, because obviously we have large transit agencies, and we probably will see an increase in usage as everyone tries to get green and public transportation goes under some changes to provide a better and more equal service to people. So I am thankful that you all came today. There will be hearings on the bill that I introduced in February, and obviously Mr. Swanson's late entry into the race, so to speak, and you know, we hope to come up with something that will satisfy all parties. Certain things cannot be undone, and therein lies the tragedy, but if the future holds promise and there's sincerity and commitment to those promises, then I feel all this has been worth it. So again, thank you so much. We're now going to open it up to public comment. May I see how many people are interested in commenting? All right, fine. If you could just approach, I think, that microphone, if that is convenient to you.
We'll give you a couple of minutes. Is that all right?
Hi, my name is David, and I want to say don't believe the hype. Dorothy Duggar wants to assure you that they've done so much, but not one single person has been held accountable to BART. She's constantly defending her police, and comparing BART to a city police force is just silly. Mesley wasn't held accountable. He was allowed to quit, as Gibson himself said, no drug testing because of what we don't know. Peroni and Domenici were both out of control on January 1st, but they've been on a 10-month paid vacation. BART police supervisors knew better than to show the video to the officers before they filed reports, but they did it anyway. Any internal affairs officers involved in the investigation are corrupt. They should be fired as well. Chief G, who saw the video that BART did steal from a passenger, by the way, they cornered him and said they would give it back or make a copy, and they didn't. He said that after watching that video, that the officers acted professionally, and recently said he disagreed with the Myers-Navier report. So conveniently, he's not here. He's still getting a check. He didn't get fired or held accountable. He was also the chief in 2001 when Bruce Seward, who was unarmed, was killed. And 8 years later, the BART Police Department is still in rotten shape. And he's still getting a paycheck. Dorothy Duggar, she keeps the board in the dark. They had BART lawyers at the preliminary hearing for Meserly, but there was no briefing for board members. I spoke with two of the board members, and they had no idea what was going on inside the preliminary hearing. She's not found a reason to hold Chief G or anyone else accountable. It was leaked to the press that Myers-Navier recommended at least Peroni and Domenici should be fired, but they haven't been fired. The officers on the platform all lied on the witness stand in the preliminary hearing. The judge was actually laughing at them several times, but that's okay to Chief G and Duggar. For these reasons and more, I believe that the committee should seriously consider disbanding the BART police. Frankly, I believe they're too broke to fix. I can offer some more evidence, just a little bit more, and then I'll be done. Read the comments submitted by the BART police online when BART asked for comments on their police oversight system. They're really nasty, they're derogatory towards Oakland, and it includes one that was kind of threatening and nasty by the head of the police officers union, the BART police officers union. Read the comments of the officers in the Noble report. Over 50% of them don't even want to work for BART. They spend most of their time driving around in cars, and they don't want to deal with people. The Noble report hints that there's corrupt officers throughout the force, and that many of them have been promoted, probably on IA and so forth, and that's why nothing happened.
So
there's serious structural problems at BART. The part-time board is never probably going to be able to properly oversee the police force. That's a structural problem. Either the board needs to be full-time or the police force probably needs to be gotten rid of. Everything that they're saying, their statements today here from the BART representatives, it's all taken on faith. And frankly, I don't think they have any credibility when they've not held a single person accountable.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker, please. If there's any other speakers, could you line up?
Thank you to this panel and this board. The gentleman before me raised a point that I would just allude to a little more directly, and that is the question as to whether or not a part-time that is as militarized as the BART Police Department is. In our experiences over the last few months, we've learned that the board members have very little expertise in policing. However, somebody has to be held accountable before the view of the public. If this were a city government, the mayor would be held accountable for the actions and duties of the local police department. However, what we have in the current structure is a highly militarized system that has legal force without the kind of oversight and control from the elected board that a police department would with a city. So the question becomes, and I'll say this in short, that the multitude of advice and counsel that's given by Myers Nabe and by Noble, is the department in its current construction able to be repaired? Is this a instance where maybe this is a cash for comfort type trading? Is this car repairable, or do we need to trade it in and start from scratch? While there's certainly a need for security at BART, does it require the highly militarized effort that the training systems that are being offered here refer to? Or might BART be better served to reduce the size of the police force and increase the size of a civilian security presence that allows for most of its contacts to be responded to? It's tens of thousands of contacts that are made, only 58 included persons with weapons, and it doesn't suggest that the 58 who were detained with a weapon actually attempted to use the weapon, as there are many people in the public that carry weapons. So the 58 weapons found or confiscated does not mean that these were 58 felony attempts with weapons. What cause is there that requires the level of police force that is there? Can BART save money, increase presence on the train, by putting security on the trains in constant contact, properly trained, and backed up by local law enforcement authorities? I think that's a question to be considered. And as we are looking at the oversight model, surely the elected officials of the public should have an engagement in oversight in the oversight process. The public should not be excluded, relying on the general management and the police chief alone to make decisions where discipline is concerned. So in that regard, we disagree with the Noble report that there should be a voice above that of the general manager and chief of police. So in closing, one of the spokesmen said, first, there's been three fatalities, and each of them, of course, are egregious, and I don't believe that any of them involved a felony crime at BART. Each of them had some dubious connections that produced us and brought us here to this day. But the commander said that the public meetings would rehabilitate the public image of BART. We're not concerned with the public image. We're concerned with the public safety. And while there's certainly a need for enforcement of law along those tracks, again, the question is, do we need to escalate militarization, or do we need to de-escalate the military effort, putting more civilian security in place that can help ensure that the trains are properly safe, that the ports are properly made, and where necessary, arrests are made in the proper manner.
Thank you. And sir, would you mind giving us your name?
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm Keith Muhammad from Oakland, California.
Thank you so much. All right, seeing no others, this will conclude public comment, and we've all made our comments. Thank you all for your attendance, and this meeting is adjourned.